Jumbo Incorporated.
May it please the court, Attorney Steve Bauer on behalf of the plaintiff appellant in this matter. We are faced with an interpretation of Indiana law concerning res ipsa loquitur. This case arose out of another truck accident on Borman Expressway in Lake County, Indiana. This particular occurrence was that a wheel assembly, two wheels with a rim, came off of the defendant's truck across the meridian and struck the plaintiff's car.
I'd like to ask a little bit about the mechanics here. The wheels, of course, are attached by a bearing to the axle. Now, does the bearing go off of the wheels or what?
Well, it appears that the bolts that hold the wheels onto the wheel axle either sheared, broke, or came loose, allowing the assembly to release and come off. There is some indication that three or four of them were sheared. There's other indications that there was no damage to the others.
It was just the tires and the rims and tires that came off.
Yes. Yes.
The bearing did not leave the axle, I gather.
Not to my knowledge, Judge.
Of course, this is one reason why a little expert testimony would be helpful here, because this is not a... And I think that's the problem here. This is a fairly complex matter, isn't it? The attachment of a wheel to an axle in an 18-wheel arrangement?
Absolutely, Judge. And that may be the focal point, and that's the reason why Indiana has res ipsa loquitur. What that says, simply stated, is that the individual that's in control of this type of property that has exclusive control, that and there is an occurrence that happens, there is the inference that it's a result of a failure or negligence on behalf of the person with the exclusive control.
Well, it seems to me you have a pretty big hurdle to jump on the exclusive management and control prong of res ipsa loquitur. The stud and bolt parts were not in the control of the defendants when they were built or when they were installed or when they were maintained. And this is particularly important since these are three instances when something could easily go wrong with the stud and bolts. I mean, doesn't that alone seal, you know, your fate on the res ipsa claim?
No, Your Honor. Magistrate Radovich felt in one of his findings that there was sufficient evidence to show exclusive control. The Rector case that Judge Radovich referred to that was decided in 2004 is extremely relevant on this particular issue because this a landowner, a business owner, was sued when a light fixture fell from the ceiling onto a customer. Part of the argument advanced in the Rector v. Oliver case was that the people that bought this business had not installed the light fixture, had not built the building, etc. The Indiana court went on to say that we don't read the control thing as being that restrictive or that narrow. In other words, if you have got a business, if you've got a piece of equipment or property that you're using in your business and you have control over that, whether or not you hire somebody else to do maintenance on it from time to time or what have you, you are still in control. So I don't really think there's any kind of serious issue that this defendant, the driver and the owner of the trailer, there is no real dispute. They were in control of the trailer.
So it's utterly impossible that the wheel assembly broke free due to the negligence of the manufacturer of the studs or bolts, or the person who installed the wheel, or the person who maintained the wheel, or any other number of possible scenarios.
Absolutely, Judge. That's true. You're correct. They could be other scenarios. There could be other reasons why this happened. But what we're looking at, if I may suggest, So we're looking at what Indiana law does with res ipsa loquitur, and it's very simple, is that it creates a presumption, an inference of negligence that's in the favor of the person that's injured by the instrumentality that's under the control of the other person. It shifts to the defendant in this thing, the owner of the trailer, the duty of coming forward and presenting evidence to show that they, you know, that what they did in fact was appropriate, proper, and not negligence.
I have to tell you, under your theory, every single case in Indiana would be res ipsa loquitur. I mean, it's an upending of the American legal system.
Judge, this is the law in the state of Indiana that has been for about 50 years, and here's what it says, Your Honor.
You know, let me just say this, forgive me, but it just seems it would be so odd if a plaintiff need only cry res ipsa without submitting any deposition testimony, any documents, any expert witnesses, and then suddenly the burden would shift to the defendants to prove that they're not responsible for the injury.
Judge, that's exactly what the Indiana law is. Now, it doesn't guarantee that that Christina in this situation is going to recover, but she gets to the jury. Look, where we are, Indiana law and the cases that's been decided and even referred to in the Rector v. Oliver simply says that the res ipsa loquitur is said to shift the burden of going forward with the evidence. It is not a traditional bursting bubble presumption. In other words, it doesn't disappear from the case upon presentation of competent evidence from the defendant that he exercise due care. In other words, Your Honors, if I may suggest, what this becomes by virtue of the res ipsa in Indiana, it becomes a jury question. It should not be resolved. It should not be resolved by summary judgment. This is clear. This is the status of the law in Indiana. If you think that this law is incorrect, I think it needs to be certified into the Indiana Supreme Court for modification, because the existing law now says that the presumption, the inference of negligence does not burst, does not disappear when counter evidence is presented by the defendant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Mr. Felt.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, I'm Rob Felt. I'm here for the appellees. And with all due respect to opposing counsel, that is not what the law in Indiana is. Otherwise, there would never be a losing res ipsa loquitur case for the plaintiff. And if you read the brief, there are many. They are legion. But before we even get to that point, I'm reminded of the fact that we stand in a federal court and apply the federal summary judgment standard. Whatever counsel may want to say about what the result would be if he could actually establish res ipsa loquitur in a state court in Indiana is not the issue. It's what does that mean for the purpose of the federal summary judgment standard. Res ipsa loquitur in Indiana is not a substantive theory of law. It is nothing more than a circumstantial evidence rule that you can draw certain circumstantial evidentiary inferences under certain circumstances, none of which have been met here, as Your Honors have pointed out. You have a driver whose testimony is uncontested that he did nothing to cause the studs, the wheel screws, whatever you want to call them, to break off, that he checked them regularly. Then you have a business owner who is a shipper who has a trailer that he's owned for 1 year that he regularly sends to an expert contractor for services that just had a full US DOT inspection. And he puts it into the hands of these experts in the same fashion that any vehicle owner puts their vehicle into the hands of their dealer to have work done, to have repairs performed.
I suggested that expert testimony would help clarify the situation. Mr. Bauer seems to be saying that it's up to the defendant to produce the expert. And
well, that's absolutely wrong, particularly
but,
that's...
What do you have to say to that?
Well, that's, first of all, that's why I mentioned the federal summary judgment standard. It is not my burden to bring an expert in to say why the wheel bolts snapped. But I did bring an expert driver in to testify, and I brought in an expert shipper in to testify as to what the standard of care is relative to them. The key question in this case is, why did the wheel studs break? I don't have to prove why they broke, but I can satisfy my burden by demonstrating that nothing that my clients did caused them to break. There was ample testimony, and this even shows up in the cases that he relies upon, that when you have a failure to maintain these kind of studs and nuts, they start to wear. You can see that. They become brown. There was testimony in his cases that happened. There was none in this case. You get wearing on the inside holes of the wheel rims. That was in one of his cases. There was no such testimony here. All of the testimony here was that everything was snug, tight, and when they snapped off, you could see shiny metal that was not worn.
Is there a material dispute here as to whether Jumbo maintained maintenance records as required by statute?
Well, that was not an issue that was argued below, other than the plaintiff summarily said they had no such records. It's not true, and there's nothing in the record to suggest that there are no maintenance or repair records. There are maintenance and repair records.
You're looking at this as a products liability case where the manufacturer might be at fault?
Well, that's part of our argument. And one of the elevator cases that was briefed extensively in this case, the Seventh Circuit even said a products manufacturer, when you're dealing, as here, with a component or a product that fails, as opposed to someone's conduct, when a product fails, the manufacturer could still be in control at the time of the accident. That's what you have here. You have shared control by at least a handful of different entities. And the law in Indiana is clear that you cannot presume negligence merely because an accident happened. That's what the plaintiff's case is here entirely. The wheel bolt snapped, the wheel came off, you, the owner of the vehicle, you're liable. So if a vehicle owner is traveling on the Borman and their brakes go out, and they just had it in to the Ford dealership and had those brakes checked.
I'm not exactly sure exactly what came off of. Judge Kinney asked a question about it was just the rims and the tires that came.
Correct.
Off.
Well,
is that
the,
right?
What you have is you have a series of bolts that stick out from the wheel assembly. Then you have a rim that goes over it, and there's two tires that go around the rim. What came off was the rim and the two tires. What was left, because Mr. Windsor saw it after the accident, was the circular portion of the wheel that the bolts are attached to, and several of the bolts were sheared off, and the metal was shiny, and he could still see the threads, and the threads were not
worn. Part
of the
wheel was left, and the bearing was left, and the axle was there.
Correct. That's all established by his affidavit, and it's unrebutted.
Now, the manufacturer of the stud and nuts or the maintenance contractor, neither were joined, were
No, that's correct. And that was one of our arguments that, for example, in the Vogler case, you have several doctors and other people involved in an operation, and they failed to join some of the parties. And they said that the hospital could not be held for res ipsa loquitur because of that failure. You see that inherent in the Peterson case, which is one of the elevator cases, and the Newell case, which is the Seventh Circuit elevator case, where they focused on who actually has the contact with the elevator. In the Newell case, the maintenance company was a proper defendant because there was evidence, including from experts, that there was a maintenance problem, as opposed to the Peterson case, where there was no indication it had anything to do with maintenance. It was the power source, and that wasn't the maintenance company. It was the hospital, the owner of the property. That's why you have to look at the facts of these situations so closely before you can even get to applying res ipsa loquitur. My light's on. I'll finish unless someone has another question.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Bauer? 2.5 minutes.
Your Honors, may it please the Court, I don't think that it's appropriate to argue that the federal summary judgment procedure should be followed in order to upset or overrule state Indiana state law concerning res ipsa loquitur. It is clear in Indiana that an inference of negligence does not disappear from a case but remains and is in place upon the scales to be weighed by the trier of facts as with any and all explanations and other evidence. In other words, when counsel says to you, well, it may have been a manufacturing error, it may have been someone else at fault, those under Indiana comparative fault law can be pled as non-parties partially at fault and responsibility assessed to them. Simply stated, res ipsa loquitur under Indiana law gets a plaintiff such as this at least to the jury, gets this plaintiff to a fact-finding venue. Because if you say the burden is now shifts back to the plaintiff to come up with concrete evidence of negligence, res ipsa is gone. Res ipsa is gone. So affirming this grant of summary judgment, in my view, and would suggest just simply overrules about 50 years of res ipsa law in the state of Indiana, and would encourage you not to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement, and we move to the fifth case.